Back in 2002, the Catholic Church instituted policies which they said would resolve the sexual abuse that was being perpetrated by priests against boys. However, that policy did not erase the past, no matter how hard the Catholic Church tried to over the years. This past week once again proved that horrors were not only being hidden by church hierarchy, but some of those horrors involved church hierarchy. My first guest today is with us to review the latest darkness forced into the light, which he has a painful personal connection with. He is the New Jersey Director of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, Mark Crawford. Thank you so much for being here today, Mark.
No, thank you, Chris.
And learn more about the work of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, snapnetwork.org. And this all revolves around, well, I'm not going to use the title because he, you know, quite frankly, has no longer any kind of respectful connection to the title. Theodore McCarrick, who was a member of the hierarchy of churches throughout New Jersey and later in Washington. What was it that became a revelation, pardon the pun, about McCarrick this past week?
Well, a victim had come forward to the New York Archdiocese, a professional businessman who alleged that he was sexually molested by McCarrick on two different occasions when he was a priest of the New York Archdiocese. In fact, the boy was 16 at the time. He was in the sacristy when apparently McCarrick shoved his hands down his pants and groped the young boy on two different occasions.
You know, over the years, ever since in 2002, when all the bishops met down in Dallas and came with the charter about zero tolerance, which I still remember watching, and more than one bishop stood up and objected to the zero tolerance idea, basically saying they wouldn't rat out their fellow brethren in the church, which was disgusting on its own right. But over the years, how much of a voice was McCarrick in support of that zero tolerance policy?
My understanding is he was in support of the zero tolerance, where many others were not. However, he said many things in support of victims, but behind the scenes, he actively, concealed known predators. There were opportunities, for him to really make a difference. And there were a number of clergy members in the Newark Archdiocese, when he was Archbishop here, that came to the light much later, even after he was gone. In my own personal case, I had reported my own abuse to an auxiliary bishop of Newark in 1983. The Newark leadership clearly knew that a particular priest of the Newark Archdiocese had abused myself and my younger brother. Yet, a couple of years later, not too long, McCarrick became Archbishop of Newark. At some point during his tenure, he promoted the man who molested my younger brother and I to be his personal secretary. So it was quite incredible to me to see that, this man, and by the way, I was told he wouldn't have access to children, and early on, when I first reported it, I was 19, and they told me, well, he's going to stay away from you, you stay away from him. Well, that never happened. They didn't even remove him from my parish, but yet when McCarrick came along and became Archbishop, he promoted him and moved him from the parish to Newark, where he served as his personal secretary. And that's a very important position within the archdiocese, within any diocese.
And the fact that McCarrick looks at you and says, this is the first time I've ever heard, of a case like this, and we're coming to learn just how involved, not just an actor, but as a part of the conspiracy to silence that McCarrick had been for decades.
Absolutely. When I did come forward again later, many years later, realizing that they had returned him to ministry and not told me, I again went back. And now McCarrick, at this point, was in charge. He was the archbishop. And I had repeatedly asked for a meeting with him. It took a while. and those pleas were ignored. I was repeatedly asked to sign a confidentiality agreement, which really angered me, and I told them that would never happen. That's the equivalent of being Judas accepting seven pieces of silver, right? So eventually he did. I sent a letter and said, listen, this is it. This is my final attempt. If you don't meet with me, you know, perhaps I need to take this to the media or deal with this in a different form. And he, upon receipt of that letter, immediately called me. He had just returned from World Youth Day in Paris in 1997, and he arranged a meeting to meet with me. So we met, and he acted like he had never dealt with a clergy abuse victim before. He told me that, and that I really helped open his eyes, and he promised several things. I asked to be involved, to be able to help educate clergy and the seminarians, you know, the impact of sexual abuse upon a victim. And I asked him, and we had heard of some cases by then, where these priests were simply being recycled. And I said, this has to stop. And I said, why? Why are you paying people for silence and secrecy? So I was very clear about that issue, that how hurtful that was, and angered I was. But still very naive at the time, thinking that things might change or things would improve. You know, shortly after I left him, it didn't take long to realize nothing had changed. They again really pushed for a confidentiality agreement. And after, you know, he said no, promised not to. So, and again, the priest who molested me was returned to ministry. So it was clear. In fact, some years later, I saw him pictured with the Archbishop at Christmas time, surrounded by children at a local hospital in Newark. And that's when I really, you know, that was it. You know, I was like, okay, they're just, you know, trying to tell people what they want to hear and doing nothing.
Yeah, the promise of transparency was less than transparent. We're talking Mark Crawford, who is the New Jersey Director of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, SnapNetwork.org, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. The silence, because it was known by the Archdiocese in New Jersey where McCarrick had done his work and perpetrated his acts. They held that for decades. I mean, how much worse would it have been if, as everything was coming through, once the Boston Globe reporters revealed what they revealed, just release the information?
Well, clearly, look, we can look back now and see it as clear. We saw it then as clear as day, right? They only made this whole horrific, historic, systemic abuse pattern that existed in our church. They only made it worse by concealing and trying to control and even this, you know, feigning forgiveness and returning men to ministry where they went right back to abusing. We saw that time and time and time again. And absolutely, same thing in the Newark Archdiocese. So when you have somebody who's at the helm, who had his own history, do we look back and wonder now why all this deception and cover-up and concealment? I certainly don't. I mean, it's clear as can be, and it's tragic because it's done so much damage and harm to the church. They've really lost generations of believers and churchgoers because they insisted on protecting the institution and their predators instead of putting these children first. That's crystal clear.
Makes me think of a quote from Lenny Bruce. He said one time, people are leaving the church in droves and returning to religion.
Yes, good point. I've had many people tell me they're recovering Catholics.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, truth be told, you're talking to one of them, because when the Boston reporters, they put out a book of their reports, and that was one of the first shows they did. At that time, I was still practicing Catholic, and it's almost an out-of-body experience when I'm discussing these things with them when they were still, the revelations were still very fresh. And it was like, no, this isn't right. I can't be a part of this body anymore.
Absolutely. And I felt the same way. And, you know, the silence, the complicity. I mean, think of the victims who didn't come forward, and then they find out later that somebody was abused, somebody came forward, that, you know, they felt complicit in their silence. And so many of them have come back and said, look, I'm speaking up. Even those that had confidentiality agreements could no longer morally and psychologically handle the pressure or strain of remaining silent, knowing these perpetrators, these priests and clergy members were out there molesting more children when that could have been prevented.
And through the delays, too, they basically ran out the clock. So that's why there's been no criminal prosecutions once the revelations came out, because the statute of limitations. So you don't see these perpetrators subject to Megan's Law, electronic monitoring and things like that.
No, not at all, because the church often ran out the clock. It was certainly the case with my abuser. They did not report him. They were required under New Jersey state law to report him to local authorities. When I told them, it was well within the statute of limitations. They did none of that. Had they, he'd probably be in jail to this day. But consequently, they only reported him in 2002 as the Boston abuse came to light, right? And nationally, the national epidemic, as victim after victim came forward, and the thousands of people who were molested as children by our clergy. It was only then, long after this criminal statute of limitations and civil had expired, did they report. As a matter of fact, when they reported to the local authorities, right, the Attorney General of New Jersey insisted they hand over the files on any known abusers. I requested that file and learned that they so underreported the abuse that myself and my younger brother experienced. It was incredible. So I can only imagine how many other times this was done. They absolutely did not tell the truth, even then.
Unfortunately, until Pope Francis, and to be fair, his predecessor, but in the here and now, Pope Francis, until he cares as much about this as he does with social engineering and climate change, unfortunately, nothing much is going to change other than through pushing, pressure, working, and demanding truth and facts, such as the work that Mark does, as well as the rest of the organization of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. That has been really the sole lifeline for the truth to come out from these decades of darkness. Learn more about this work and to support it and be a part of it as well, and to find a release if that's something you've been holding within yourself too, that there are people who have suffered with you, if that's been part of your past life. And no, go ahead, Mark.
Absolutely. Look, it's the years of silence that tormented me, and it's never easy for me to speak out publicly, but I feel it must be done. If we really want change, we have to find our voice, and I'm so glad I have, and that I have spoken up. I don't regret it. It's helped me heal, and I think others may find that as well. So hopefully, if you're in a safe place, know that people support you, know that you're not alone. And for those who have stood up, come out, been counted, I am very proud of you. I support you. You are not alone.
SnapNetwork.org, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Mark Crawford, thank you so much for your work, your dedication, for being here today.
Thank you, Chris.